Pacific Institute for Research and Education would like to welcome you to your conference. My name is Megan, and I will be your conference moderator for today's call. Fake IDs. Who's going after the manufacturers? If at any time you should need operator assistance, you may press *0 and an operator will assist you. Right now, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions on how to participate will come at that time. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's call, Mr. Bill Patterson. Bill, you may go ahead.
Thank you, Megan, and hello from Raleigh, North Carolina, and welcome to the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention's OJJDP's Enforcing Underage Drinking Laws audio teleconference series. I am Bill Patterson, Senior Program Manager with the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, located at the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation, which is located in metropolitan Washington, D.C., where today we are coming to you from Raleigh, North Carolina, as we are on our day number 3 of icy weather, causing closings of schools and businesses for the second day, and as one official described it, horrendous driving conditions in the state. And I hope things are much better where you are today. We have over 240 participants registered for our teleconference, and we'd like to welcome any newcomers to the audio teleconference series. We'd also like to remind our listeners that this audio teleconference is being taped. During the presentations, the audience will be in listen mode only, and at the end of our presentations, the audience will have an opportunity to participate in a moderated question and discussion session. And don't forget our enhanced feature that we've added to our series, and that is the simultaneous web presentation. You can connect to our web presentation at www.glyphics.com. That's www.glyphics, that's GLYPHICS, glyphics.com. You'll be asked for the conference ID for the web presentation, and that number is 1839. That number again is 1839. And our today's topic is who's going after the manufacturers on fake IDs? Fake IDs are an epidemic problem in this country, as most of us know. And they not only influence youth access to alcohol, but they also impact homeland security. Speakers will address the problem of false identification and what's being done to investigate the manufacturers of these fakes. We'll discuss today what you and your department can do in your community and your state to target the makers of these false identifications. We have several knowledgeable speakers to discuss our topic today. Presenting are David Myers, who is a major with the Florida Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco. David, you're from located where?
I'm at the Capitol in Tallahassee, Florida.
In Tallahassee, Florida. Also from Washington State, from the Washington State Liquor Control Board, Liquor Enforcement Officer Jackie Eliason, who is stationed in the Tacoma, Washington office. We'd like to welcome both of you today to our teleconference series. Our first speaker in setting the stage for our topic today, David Myers, a major with the Florida Division of the Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco. David, welcome.
Oh, welcome to everyone. First of all, the Florida Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco, currently we have approximately 150 sworn agents covering the state of Florida, and false IDs is a major issue with us. We have a fraudulent identification laboratory, and we seize between 10 and 20,000 counterfeit ID documents every year. On the next slide, the big question is, who are you? We can't tell who people are without identification. In the old days, we knew who people were by how they were related to other people or had certain questions we could ask them. But now we depend on identification. And basically, a piece of plastic that with current technology is very easy to duplicate, we don't really know who people are. On the next slide, we see that underage drinking is still the number one problem. It's the number one killer of our youth. And false ID is a very common issue that follows the underage drinking. Some underage drinkers will spend as much as $1,500 on a very high-quality counterfeit identification card. As we go through the next slide, we see Spring Break Daytona Beach. We may have several hundred thousand people that walk these beaches between Panama City Beach, Daytona Beach, and other spring break locations around the country. The next slide shows a licensed premise that sells alcohol in the Panama City Beach area. This premise holds almost 7,000 people within the licensed premise. And it's at the point that we may confiscate during spring break several hundred counterfeit IDs and make several hundred arrests a night at the one particular location. In the next slide, we see that identification is the key. The first thing a law enforcement officer does when he stops someone is, "May I see your identification, please?" And if he doesn't know what he's looking for, he doesn't know what he's looking at. And that's something we're going to talk today, certain features that are in documents that make it easier for us to verify whether they're authentic. Just merely checking a license in the computer tells us nothing, because someone can get somebody's legitimate information who has a license and create a counterfeit with their image on it, and it will continuously come back as a valid document, even though it may not be. The next slide discusses financial issues, banking fraud. A lot of these underage drinkers, once they turn 21, they don't throw their IDs away anymore. They're starting to use them for other types of criminal activity. The next tells us about secure locations. We're running into issues with everything from Pentagon identification documents to high-level law enforcement documents that are being counterfeited by these same people. The next slide, we're looking into aircraft issues. How hard is it to get on an aircraft? Who's the people checking the ID? Do they know what they're looking at? If they don't know what they're looking for, they don't know what they're looking at, and that's the problem, is training. Very few people get training. Law enforcement gets very little, and the airline industry gets virtually no training in the detection of false identification. In the next slide, we look at identity theft, one of the fastest growing crimes in the history of the world. Estimates up to $300 billion in fraud, and identification is a key player in this particular thing. And what's happening is it all falls back to our original idea of the underage drinker. When we go to the next slide, we see that there are currently 584 valid versions of state-issued identification cards. States are issuing multiple versions. There are some states that have licenses that are good for as many as 40 and 50 years, keeping the old ones valid, and the new ones come out every time there's a change of governor or a budget change. So we're bombarded with these hundreds and hundreds of different types of IDs, and nobody really knows what they're looking at because they're not familiar with some of the newer styles and some of the states that aren't border states to them. In the next slide, we look at what is an acceptable identification document. Now we have foreign countries that are issuing to their illegal aliens consulate and matriculate cards. Are they acceptable? Are they not? What is your state doing to verify these documents? We don't even really know what is an acceptable document anymore. The next slide, we're running into international driver's licenses. We see them every day, and we get calls even from law enforcement agencies. How do we verify these? Well, there's no such thing as an international driver's license. There's merely an international driver's permit called an IDP, and this IDP is merely a translation to English of your foreign driver's license. It is not an individual unique document, so we see these things quite often. On slide 14, we see that we're getting counterfeits from not only around the United States, but around the world. These kids are learning that you may not know, you may know what your state ID looks like, but you may not know what a farther state, but even going to the extreme, one from a foreign country. These are all counterfeits. Within 24 hours of spring break in one city, we confiscated counterfeits from over 100 foreign countries. The next slide is a good example of a counterfeit versus a legitimate document. They are very, very similar, and without special training, you wouldn't know the difference of the two. But the person up in the top left with the counterfeit was only 19 years old and had his license suspended for 5 years for 3 prior DUIs and just happened to be unveiled during a normal underage check. Similar in the next slide, here's a young man on the bottom right that had the counterfeit California. And if you look at the two side by side without having specific knowledge of that particular document, they both look the same. This particular person was a wanted felon who was out at one of the underage hotspots and has been wanted for many years for some very serious crimes, but had been using his false ID to hide under. The next slide and the next several slides are going to be a variation between the counterfeit and the real. If you look on the top left, you'll see the Arkansas original issue. On the right, you'll see the counterfeits, and look how close they look from one to the other. They're made on the same material with the same plastics and same printing styles. Same thing with the next slide, which is California. On to the next one, which is Florida. And the next slide is Virginia. And we have all 50 states. We get all 50 states usually within about a day of the spring break detail. So the quality is getting better, and the detection is getting much more difficult. The next slide, we're going to start looking at identification security. How do we know whether a document is good? Is there other security that's not being taught to us? And we can't really do this in 15 minutes. We're going to take a look at some of that basic security. This next slide shows an example here with California. Notice the DMV in the top left-hand corner. If you take a look at the first picture, you'll see the letters DMV. But looking closer at the next picture, you'll see the words California is printed into the letters DMV. That's called microprinting or microtext. Very common in the newer driver's licenses. Many, many states have that. Problem is, they don't ever tell you where it is and whether they have it or not. And in our other training programs, we teach you how to identify that particular type of security printing. It's fairly difficult to reproduce. Has it been reproduced? Yes. But the cost is quite a bit more than a standard document. And then the image on the right bottom is the ultraviolet image. If you take a black light and put it on top of that California driver's license, you'll see images of the California flag in multicolor. They will illuminate, fluoresce. And a lot of counterfeiters don't realize this, and then they don't try to counterfeit that fluorescence. And to do so is also a very expensive process. The next slide, Washington, D.C., you can also see there, we'll go through these a little more quickly here, hidden printing in the stars on the flag, the UV, ultraviolet luminance, also the barcoding on the back of the license. The next slide, Iowa. In the Iowa, around the circle of the symbol, is microprinting that's put on that license. A counterfeit would not normally have such microprinting. Also, the ultraviolet imaging and the mag stripe and barcodes on the back. The next slide is Tennessee, a new one. Along the flagpole, they hide in the date of birth. A nice little addition. And if you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know what you're looking at. So you need to know where these security features are. The next slide shows what other countries are doing. There's Slovenia. For years and years, have been putting laser etchings in their card, microprint, personal microprint. Every one of the little squiggly lines under the license has this person's personal information. It is a very difficult license to counterfeit, and we find that better quality licenses are actually issued over in the European countries. The next slide shows that it's not just driver's license. Here's a counterfeit military CAT card. The newest high-tech military security ID card is being counterfeited. We rented these more and more. The person on the right, that one's counterfeit. He just turned 17 years old. The next slide shows the new high-tech immigration permanent resident card. The one on the bottom right is a counterfeit and made with most of the security features. Other types of ID we're starting to see in the bars, and this particular slide is passports. We're getting passports now from all the countries of the world, and counterfeit is very common. And it's also very common with terrorists and other people that are trying to gain access into our country. The next slide, we're talking about counterfeiters on the move. The next slide, 31, shows an overlay that actually has an image in it. Now they've created these that you just slide on a white card, and then if law enforcement checks you, you just turn around and pull the image off, and then your older license is underneath it. So it appears that the doorman just let you in when in fact you did alter your license. The next slide shows that the ultraviolet inks that we use in making high secure licenses is being sold on the internet, being readily available. An example is in the next slide, this New York license. Both of these licenses fluoresce under UV light, when in fact the one on the bottom right is a total counterfeit, but a fairly expensive version. Even a better example of counterfeiting is in the next slide, this Virginia license. Very well done. If you look at the next slide, slide 35, you see a dime. The dime shows you the, how small the printing is, where we have listed as the microprinting around the license. You can see how small microprinting is compared to the dime. Well, in the next slide, you see a larger version, and that's the edge of the dime. Notice how close the two printings are, and this is 0.035 millimeters, a very, very small printing. But even the counterfeiters have found ways to create these. The next slide shows even counterfeit law enforcement credentials we're running into. The next slide shows us gun shows where they're selling false IDs. It is very, very common. Slide 39 shows flyers that are being sent out. Basically, open your own driver's license office, the cameras, the printers. There is not a unique printer that the DMV uses that you can't get access to via the internet. Keeping one step above the counterfeiters on our next slide, different ways we can use technology. Here's an ID scanner, the government version that our agents are issued, that they can scan and read the magnetic and 2D barcode off the driver's license, though that can also be counterfeited. It's fairly rare currently. The next slide is our lab, where we can authenticate driver's licenses. We have one of the largest document libraries in the world as far as known samples. You can't authenticate an ID document unless you have a known sample to compare it to, and we do comparison studies. The slide 43 shows some new technology that's being developed. This is the imaging automation device for reading passports and driver's license and other high tech. It's actually an imager. Very, very nice technology that's coming out. The investigation and enforcement end. The next slide, you'll see some of our agents out doing some underage enforcement. They do use the portable scanners to check IDs, and our agents get some fairly advanced training in the detection of counterfeit identification documents. On slide 46, you'll see a counterfeiter at work. When we entered the location, he was still typing away and doing his thing. In his room, he had multiple printers, multiple scanners, and employees. He made millions of dollars a year making credentials, everything from driver's license to underage drinkers, ID cards for terrorist-related groups, airport security passes, and government security passes. These are quite common, very difficult to work. But our agents have been fairly successful making several arrests for manufacturers every month. We also work with other agencies on going overseas and around the country. And this particular slide is another young man. This was a 19-year-old college student that had basic equipment is all he had and was making quite a bit of money. About $250,000 a year selling driver's licenses on his little website. In the next slide, you'll see that he had envelopes already set up to mail with licenses in them, and they're going to everybody from 80-year-old people doing Social Security fraud, military people, underage drinkers, bank employees, you name it. That's $7,000 profit in those envelopes going out. He mailed twice a day. And the next slide, we don't buy computers anymore. We seize them. Usually the best computers are used by the bad guys. There's quite a bit of equipment out there, and the only way we can slow them down is by taking that equipment from them. In the next slide, you'll see a blank template. This happens to be a Tennessee license that was taken out of a computer that was seized. And all you do is insert a photo, type the information, and print it over to a card-style printer. Very easy to do. The next slide, we're talking about the future of identification. This next card is what I consider the most secure ID document in the world today that's publicly issued. It's a Canadian Maple Leaf card. I don't have time to get into all the security, but it's a very simple, clean-looking card. If you look at the next slide, which is the back of the card, that is an optical bar on the back that holds 1.5 million bits of data. The next slide shows micro printing in every format, in every font, in every style. There's over 200 fonts and formats in those micro printings, and they're all unique to that one individual, which makes it very difficult to counterfeit. On the next slide, you'll see the back of the card. Micro images on the back that are inside the optical memory bar. Each photograph you see at the bottom is the size of a pencil tip. Extremely difficult to counterfeit. And how much detail can you get on something the size of a pencil tip? Well, the next slide shows you. This is the detail that's in one of those images. Very, very impressive. What can we do to try to help prevent some of that? There are some things available. The next slide shows you a DocuTector, which is an online for government and law enforcement types only, but it has a document library of over 20,000 valid documents and their security features that allows you to take a look and see what's on there and helps you to verify a counterfeit document. And then, of course, in the last slide, the old ID checking type book that's available. These are great. They come out every year. They're a very good tool. The things that we're trying to do, though, is get states to kind of get in the same page and make it a little less complex to verify an identification document. But going after one manufacturer usually stops tens of thousands of IDs from hitting the street. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David, for that great presentation. It's almost mind-boggling when you think that as technology continues to move forward, that the bad guys are either one step behind or one step ahead of us. And I'm sure that our listening audience will have some more questions for you at the end of the presentations today. Thank you again.
Thank you.
You're listening to the OJJDP Enforcing Underage Drinking Laws audio teleconference series, and for those of you who may have just joined us, today's topic is fake IDs, who's going after the manufacturers? And our second speaker is Liquor Enforcement Officer Jackie Eliason with the Washington State Liquor Control Board. Jackie's stationed in Tacoma, Washington, where I hear it's sun shining and blue skies up your way. Jackie, and welcome.
Thank you. And yeah, it does sound like we have a little bit better weather than you do. First of all, thank you for asking us to present to you a particular fake ID case that we had dealt with back in the year 2001. I'll be going over how we found out about this suspect and the information, how we handle it, some of the results from the making of his fake IDs, and hopefully I'll give you some safeguards to help reduce fake ID usage. In early May of 2001, the Washington State Liquor Control Board Tacoma Enforcement Office received a call from a confidential informant stating that she was aware of a fraudulent ID operation, and the information that was received from this person stated she knew of someone who was manufacturing and selling fraudulent ID, driver's licenses, and even credit cards. Apparently the suspect would meet his, as you would call, customers at a McDonald's, which ironically was directly across the street from the jail and courthouse, and also next to the Department of Corrections, where the suspect would already be meeting with his probation officer at times. And he would even be so bold as to go to the food courts in a local mall. The suspect would at that time have his customers complete a fake application for the fraudulent ID, and he would charge them anywhere between $50 to $125 for each ID. Usually at that time he would provide them two. The meeting, after speaking with a confidential informant on the phone, a meeting was arranged for the liquor control officers to meet with the informant. And although the informant agreed to provide a written statement and also testify in court, she was not willing to come forward at that time for fear of retaliation from the suspect. The confidential informant stated that the suspect had been heard to say that he will, quote, take anyone out who messes with his business. We took the information from the confidential informant and we began our investigation. During our investigation, we discovered that the suspect, whom we'll call Mr. Andrews, had been arrested just a few months earlier in February of 2001 and had served time for possession of stolen property. In particular, it was a 38-foot yacht. It was confirmed also that Mr. Andrews had prepared and presented numerous fraudulent documents that he made and gave them to the Department of Licensing, showing that he allegedly had rebuilt this yacht. And based on the fraudulent information that he presented to the Department of Licensing, they gave him a valid, per se, boat registration in his name. A few of the documents found during the search of the yacht when he was taken into custody were quite interesting. First of all, the way he was caught was the fact that a off-duty Coast Guard officer was sitting on his back deck, which overlooked the water, and happened to see Mr. Andrews coming in on this boat, which had the numbers scratched off. The Coast Guard officer called in to some on-duty officers, and they followed up and checked out the boat, and when they were meeting up with Mr. Andrews, he apparently was tossing computers and other things off the side of the yacht. However, during their search, some of the things that were confiscated were three books in particular, titling The Counterfeiting Crime of the Century, The Counterfeiter, and Under Contract, the True Account of a Cop Hired to Kill. Other evidence seized during that arrest included a digital camera with memory cards, which had portrait-style photos of youthful-appearing people, a 9mm handgun, numerous receipts with false information with Mr. Andrews' name on them, and stuck in the back of a legal pad of paper were some ID applications. The applications asked for the last, middle, and first name, the address, and a choice of cities, those being Las Vegas, Reno, Carson City, Olympia, Tacoma, Bellevue, Seattle, Federal Way, and the list goes on and on. State selections were obviously Nevada and Washington, so he made this quite easy for these underage people to fill out the application. The application also asked for the height, weight, natural hair color, and eye color, and there was also a provision for the real month and day of birth, and then two boxes. At that time, either checking 1978 or 79 would put that person at the age of 21 or older. A signature box was at the bottom of the application with a notation below it stating, quote, sign inside the box, do not touch the edges. In total at that time, they located 34 blank applications and 71 completed applications. In regards to the handgun that was located on the yacht, we tracked down the registered owner based on the serial number that was taken off of the weapon. The registered owner stated that he had sold the gun approximately 6 months prior after placing an ad in the newspaper. Unbeknownst to the seller, the buyer, Mr. Andrews, provided a false Nevada driver's license when he purchased the weapon. On May 11th of 2001, at 9 a.m. in the morning, it was a long day for all of us, Liquor Control Board officers went and visited the Department of Corrections in Tacoma and met with a supervisor of the department. The supervisor was then informed that the suspect would be reporting to them on this date at 1:30, and he would be under the assumption that he, Mr. Andrews, had an orientation meeting with his probation officer. The supervisor was then advised of our search warrant that we had obtained and informed him that Mr. Andrews would need to be taken into custody at that time. Later on that day at 1:30, Mr. Andrews arrived right on time for his scheduled appointment with DOC, and at 1:35, he was already taken into custody. The suspect was searched by officers, and some of the things that search produced was one switchblade knife, a black leather wallet containing two fake driver's licenses in Mr. Andrews' name. One was from Nevada. The other was from New Jersey. Both of them had a date of birth of 12/6/78. He was also carrying a valid driver's license with his true date of birth of 12/6/80. Also in his possession were two stacks of fake ID and driver's licenses, a total of 46 of them, that he apparently was getting ready to deliver. Fortunately, he didn't have a chance to do so. All of them were from Washington except one. By 2:10 in the afternoon the same day, the Tacoma Police Department had their officers secure Mr. Andrews' residence in preparation for the search to begin. And the search team consisted of the Washington State Liquor Control Board officers, Tacoma police officers, and also the FBI. The reason the FBI was involved was based on the information received by our confidential informant that Mr. Andrews had even made up a fake FBI badge and had been able to enter our county courthouse by using the fake badge, and also was carrying a weapon into the courthouse at that time. The search did not come up with the FBI badge, but we came up with plenty more. In the residence, which was a small one-bedroom apartment, there were numerous things that showed fake IDs were definitely being made up at this location. Some of the things were three computers, a splitter router, laminator, scanner, printer, paper shredder, boxes of laminate and photo paper. Other items consisted of two marijuana pipes, a Remington shotgun, butterfly knife, gun case, with five boxes of .22 caliber ammo and clip, boxes of computer equipment, motherboards, and even a homemade laptop computer that he had made. Some of the documents that we found were homemade applications for the driver's licenses for the states of Washington and Nevada, a counterfeit birth certificate for Mr. Andrews with a template, which looked extremely real, and other various fraudulent identifications for Mr. Andrews with his name and also his roommate's name on them. One of the books that we seized out of his apartment that the confidential informant had suggested that we look for was a green hard-covered book that was hollowed out to conceal money. While in the process of unhooking the computers that were going to be seized from Mr. Andrews' apartment, it was found that the computer wires went through the wall into the next-door apartment. Therefore, immediately, a second search warrant was obtained, and it was issued to the second apartment. Unfortunately, no one was home at that time. We did gain entry, and while a detective began to disconnect the wires from the computer in the second apartment, he noticed three briefcases hidden in the corner behind the computer. At the same time, one of the search members in Mr. Andrews' apartment had found a detailed drawing with instructions on making a briefcase bomb. At that time, needless to say, the search was stopped until a bomb squad supervisor could be notified. While we were waiting for a call back from the bomb squad supervisor, the tenant of the second apartment arrived. The search warrant was explained to her, and also what had been found in the apartments. She stated that the briefcases did not contain any explosives, and she even opened them for us. Fortunately, everything was fine, and the search resumed. The tenant also provided us with a written statement of her knowledge of Mr. Andrews' fake ID operation. She agreed to assist him by letting him use her computer. In return, she would be getting free cable. The search was finally completed at approximately 6:30 p.m. that evening. From the information and documents received during the search, the Washington State Liquor Control Board officers took the applications that were already completed and also the pre-made fake IDs and began contacting each of these minor persons. And it's kind of funny because I would say probably 90 to 95% of them would use their true names and true addresses and their true month and day of birth. The only thing that was different, of course, would be the year. So they made it quite easy for us, and we tracked them all over the state, and we came up with approximately 100, a little over 100 contacts. Almost all of them provided us with written statements, and each of them were shown a photo montage to include Mr. Andrews' photo, and he was identified by all, and each of the minors agreed to give us their written statements on how they met up with him and how they purchased it and how it happened, as Mr. Andrews would even take their pictures at the locations I previously mentioned. He would just pull out his camera and take photos in the mall or out in the street or wherever he needed to. So based on the investigation, the search warrant, and follow-up investigations, Mr. Andrews was charged with 10 counts of felony forgery, and he was convicted and served 22 months in a county jail. To the best of our knowledge, Mr. Andrews currently lives in Nevada, near the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, near his mother. However, we're concerned that he could be starting right back up again. I'd like to share with you just a couple of examples as a result of Mr. Andrews providing fake IDs to minors. A couple of examples of what we are aware of as far as cases. The first one, two females were stopped in their vehicle one evening. Both the driver and her passenger were intoxicated. Both were minors. Both were in possession of fake IDs, which they had purchased from Mr. Andrews. And needless to say, both were not only criminally cited for alcohol violations, but they were also cited for possession of fraudulent ID. The second example occurred about 2:15 in the morning, where officers were advised of a one-car injury collision near the Idaho state line. Upon arrival, officers found the vehicle abandoned, and it was down in the ditch. Ultimately, officers did make contact with two males that were at a nearby hospital. It was confirmed that the two males were the occupants from the vehicle. The passenger was uninjured, however, he was intoxicated, and it was confirmed he was a minor. The driver, however, was being treated for serious lacerations to his face, forehead, and left knee. He, too, was a minor. And officers located a fake Nevada driver's license in his wallet. Fortunately, the driver did complete a statement that he had received and purchased this fake ID from Mr. Andrews for $50. The driver was criminally cited for DUI and possession of a fraudulent ID. Some of the things that the Washington State Liquor Control Board officers share with our liquor licensees and ID checkers is certain things that you can do to try and at least reduce fake ID usage. Some of those obviously are definitely ask the person to remove the ID from the wallet. You can get a lot of information by how the ID feels. Examine the photo. Check the physicals of the person. Question the ID information, such as, obviously, their date of birth, their address, eye color, anything. Ask them to sign their name on a piece of paper. Compare the signatures. Ask them for a second piece of ID with photo, signature. Confirm with your communication centers, obviously. Call them in, see if they're valid. And if available, use the ID checking book guide. There's so many fake IDs going around, as Major David Myers stated. Washington, too, is having the same problem, and we have had some other cases that we've obtained fake IDs, fake ID manufacturing. But even though we have a new format for our driver's licenses here in the state of Washington over the past year or so, yes, they're already coming up with them here. They're leaving out the hologram portion, though. But we're working on it, and if anybody has any questions, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that presentation, Jackie Eliason from Washington State Liquor Control. And we appreciate you being on the program today. And if you'll stand by, we'll be going to questions following our last presentation. And that will be from Enforcement Assistant Supervisor with the Louisiana Office of Alcohol and Tobacco Control there in Baton Rouge, Lewis Thompson, and also Supervisor Ronald Kinchin with the same office. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Bill. It's Lewis Thompson. With me is Director Steve Scalita.
I'm sorry. Congratulations on your appointment, Steve, and welcome.
Thank you. We have a case we've just finished, and it hasn't gone to trial yet, but we're going to give you particulars if we can on the case, just not to discuss some of the things that haven't gone to court yet. I'm going to let Steve brief you on what we have found out in the case.
Okay, and Steve, if you could get just a little bit closer to the to your microphone there, if it's cutting in and out.
Okay, how's that?
That's a lot better.
The two presentations that we've listened to so far have been some of the things, not as intense, but a lot of the experiences we're familiar with by working details with on college universities and college related events, and we've come across numerous fake IDs and all sorts of sources, stemming from internets to private businesses providing different forms of false identification. The situation that we've encountered a few months ago was just a little different than what we're used to, and usually our agents can detect false identification from just old-fashioned Q&A, question and answer, is when they detain individuals in the field. And that's basically how we have educated ourselves, going from one case to another, and in a lot of similarity to what we've already heard. What transpired back in October was a little different in the event where we had a college student, 19 years old, turned up dead in his apartment from acute alcohol poisoning. And when the Baton Rouge Police Department were conducting their investigation on that evening, they came across a Texas driver's license that appeared to be authentic. And as they were completing their investigation and going through the deceased wallet, they encountered, of course, a Louisiana driver's license and several other documents that that shared the same information as a Louisiana driver's license, which deemed the Texas driver's license to be inaccurate. As a result, they contacted our office and the City of Baton Rouge Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and we worked together by gathering information relative to the fake ID. Where that led us, and at the time we didn't know exactly what we were, where we were going to be led in reference to the fake ID. So we started at the source to find out where the underage person got his alcohol. So we narrowed it down to the retail store based on information we received from the deceased's roommates, and we went to the retail store, and they were extremely cooperative, and they provided us with digital video of the underage persons entering the establishment and purchasing, spending several minutes in there, selecting what they were going to purchase, gave it to one person, and he went up to the cashier. Not only did the cashier check her driver's license, but because she was underage, at the store's policy, she wasn't allowed to touch it under store policy. Therefore, the manager checked the ID as well as swiped the strip to verify the person's age and the validity of the driver's license. Everything checked out. The gentleman walked out of the store, and 6 or 7 hours later, he turned up dead. Alcohol poisoning at his apartment. We found out all the facts from the retail store, which led us to additional interviews, which again led us to gave us enough information to obtain our first search warrant. The death of the individual, and the individual's name is Corey James Dumain. Overnight. And his death was actually on October 9th. The information we received and everything that we worked up to led to a search warrant be executed on the 28th of October on one Baton Rouge apartment right off campus, right outside of LSU. We served the search warrant, and the suspect was not home at the time, but with the assistance of the Attorney General's office and other law enforcement agencies, we searched the apartment, and we came up with the usual suspects, such as the computer and various software and cutters and just stuff that was relative to making some form of ID. But we didn't have the high-tech equipment. We didn't see the plastic inserts, the encoder, the cutter, or anything to that matter. But what we did get is a roommate that talked a lot and was scared of several things as far as being kicked out of college and whatnot. So needless to say, he cooperated fully, which led us to two additional warrants on that night. We served the warrants later on that evening. The first one was actually on LSU's campus inside of a dorm. And as a result of that, we detained an individual that was in the possession of about a dozen IDs on his person that were being prepared for delivery. He quickly cooperated and led us to two more apartments on that night, same night. And he also led us to another residence in the greater New Orleans area, which led us to a 17-year-old high school student. So we gathered a lot of information in 2 days in the apartments that we went to, go into the details of each apartment, but the common denominator of three of the six individuals in question, I'm going to say four, was a high-tech computer, usually with the 2.8 gigahertz computer, which is a fast computer, and all the hard drives that we encountered exceeded 120 and higher. And you could say the criminals had the best equipment, but these kids indeed did have the best equipment, and they also had the knowledge on how to build the best equipment at little to no cost. And what we did find, and what we did find from an extensive interview on the night of the 28th before we went to the other search warrants, was that these college students weren't actually creating passports or creating credit cards of that nature. It appeared to us that these persons were actually just getting started. What they were doing is they were using simple software on the computer, something that would come in a package if you purchased a computer, or you could buy from any Office Depot or whatnot, a holographic printer, various laminates, and in some cases, plastic inserts with the magnetic strips, cutters, and encoders. And out of the six suspects that we interviewed and eventually arrested and charged, four of them were only actually making the IDs, whereas two of them were doing the sales business in the field in kind of front men. They were taking pictures at various locations, emailing the pictures through the LSU PAWS account, which is the university email, which is free to college students, and they were creating these IDs inside their dorm rooms and or apartments. It would take about 15 minutes to create a perfect Texas driver's license. But let me back up. It led to only one individual who was a high school student in New Orleans back in the year of 2002-2003. He spent countless hours creating a template, and he would use simple software creating the template, but the time he spent took probably anywhere from 20 to 30 hours perfecting it. Once he perfected the template, he would solicit other individuals with computer knowledge such as himself, and he would teach them how to use it. Once they learned how to use it, it would only take 10 to 15 minutes to make one driver's license. Ironically, what was the pricing for the driver's license was for college students up at around the LSU campus in Southeastern and wherever they sell them, we found that they were paying anywhere from $80 to $120 for one driver's license, whereas the high school students were actually paying $200 to $250 per driver's license. And basically what all this led to was the primary driver's license that was being utilized was the state of Texas. And under Louisiana law, we were trying to link a charge to bring for this type of activity. Now, as far as the Louisiana driver's license, there is not a charge that coincides with this type of activity, which drew a problem that led to the Department of Public Safety, under the assistance of Baton Rouge Alcohol Beverage Control, to get we actually have a copyright on the Louisiana State driver's license, where if we track our internet sales of a Louisiana driver's license or anyone else, we actually have the right to drag them in the civil district court, which is really, it's effective, but it takes a long time to address one situation. How we were able to prevail with the Texas driver's license is the signature of the DPS director is actually on the driver's license. So the city of Baton Rouge District Attorney's Office was happy to accept the charge of forgery based on the counterfeit of one driver's license. They have not assessed the amount of counts as far as per individual regarding the six individuals that we've arrested the first week of December. But I can assure you, if need be, they may be able to assess a forgery charge, one count per driver's license. And they have not come to terms of how they're going to assess that, because we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of driver's licenses. And of course, at 5 years per count, I truly and honestly don't foresee one child or one underage person going to jail for 20 years. But with that being said, they definitely have a lot in their a lot of leeway in on their side regarding how these charges are going to be assessed, and that's what we're in the middle of right now. The most tragic part of this whole thing is that as much as we have been working with counterfeit and false IDs, and as much work as the agents here at Louisiana Alcohol and Tobacco Control do in the field, and the hundreds of licenses that we confiscate, this is the first one that has been directly linked to a death. And we ask ourselves this question time and time again: if Corey Dumaine wasn't in possession of that driver's license on the night of October 10th, would he be alive today? And that's the question that remains, and it'll always remain a mystery. And it's a question we can't answer, but in the future, we definitely will use the information that we received and move on to prevent this from happening. And as a result of all the interviews and everything that we've done up to this point, we have countless leads to additional rings that lead all the way to the state of Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. And these kids were just actually getting started regarding what they were doing. And one of the other speeches related to an encoder and magnetic strip. And as for these individuals, it seems to be an isolated regarding the Texas driver's license and these six individuals, but the technology is definitely advanced, and it's definitely easy for them to get their hands on and get started and have one of these individuals or teach themselves on which way to go regarding how to make them. But with all that being said, what we intend to do is, with the hundreds and hundreds of IDs and persons that we have regarding images of persons in the database that we've secured, we are probably going to be securing hundreds of written statements in order to secure our felony charges. And our one, we have six arrests with forgery and one obstruction of justice. That was the most advanced suspect that attempted to wipe his computer, and the Attorney General's high-tech crimes unit was able to retain all the information on his computer, even with the software that he used to wipe his computer. So the obstruction of justice is also going to be one of the charges assessed by the District Attorney's Office. Now, as far as the individuals that are out there, the hundreds of kids, and that ranges from high school to college, and some as young as 14 and 15 years old, they will be receiving some type of notice, probably through the mail, if they're not reached out to directly and brought in to give a statement. Now, as far as what charges they will be facing, it has not yet been determined by the District Attorney's Office. The way this is going to end, as far as we're concerned, we are more focused on the six suspects and the leads that they can provide us, because the leads that they are going to provide us are going to lead to different rings. So basically, we are just getting our feet wet in this type of situation, although we've had extensive experience, and this is actually the first ring that this office has actually cracked, and we all have learned so much from it. And I'll be happy to answer any questions relative to this investigation within the scope of our capacity regarding that the case is still ongoing.
Thank you very much, Steve. Director Steve Spoleta with the Louisiana Office of Alcohol Tobacco Control. That's a very interesting case, and certainly a recent case that you're talking about. I hope everyone has enjoyed today's presentations. We're going to open it up for questions and a discussion portion of the program. Megan, if you can please provide instructions to our participants to aid them in asking their questions today.
Thank you, Bill. If anyone would like to ask a question at this time, you may press 01 on your touchtone phone. This will place you into an electronic queue, and I will then open up your lines one by one so that each of you may ask your question. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press 02. So once again, if anyone has a question at this time, you may press 01 on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from Sam with EC and Real-Time ID. You may go ahead.
Hi, this is Joe and Sam. We're in Austin, Texas.
Welcome.
Thank you. We enjoyed your discussion. We have a question. I have a product that can use a cell phone which basically swipes or reads a 2D barcode from a driver's license. It presents the information from the state driver's license onto a screen that, for example, would say Joe, and he's ugly, and he's underage. And then what the cell phone does is dials the state DMV record, the official database, and compares information, and within 2 or 3 seconds, verifies if it's all the information matches, including the date of birth, et cetera, so that the person reading the information that could either be a bar owner, a restaurant owner, a alcoholic beverage commission enforcement officer, or a police officer, get an instant verification if the data on the read of the DMV license matches the official database. But my question is, and I'm not promoting the product, my question is, we are trying to contact all of the states, and quite frankly, about every 2 or 3 states we contact, they don't quite understand our what we're trying to put together. A quick example is, let's say a state says, we'll allow you to access our database, but we want to charge you $1.50 per access. So that would mean that to access 1,000 records during a weekend would be prohibitively expensive, either for a police department or a restaurant or a bar owner. But when I try to explain that we want to access the database to verify information for underage drinking, it's just a very long and drawn-out process. Does anybody have any recommendations of any laws or regulations or how we could approach the states? And I have been talking to AMBA, by the way, and the National Association of State Liquor Administrators, but I'm looking for a way that I could basically see how I can convince the states that we would like to have access to their database to use to verify underage.
David Myers from Florida, I know you told me that you work with devices or look at devices like the gentleman's talking about. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, we all know each other, and we can talk later on the phone. I don't want to get into any between one company and another company, but I'm very knowledgeable of the system and what the issue is, and we've spoken before, so to keep from taking too much time in the conference call, we can chat later, whatever's good for you.
Does that answer your question, sir?
All right, our next question will come from Kent with Kansas Department of Revenue. You may go ahead.
Kansas Department of Revenue, welcome.
Well, push the button.
Well, right there.
We can hear you.
Okay, David, this is for you.
Okay, go ahead.
David, Jim Karasak out here in Kansas.
Hey, I thought they buried you under the snow pile.
No, not yet. I'm South family.
Look well.
Good. Listen, we missed the first part of the presentation on your slideshow. Do you have that on PowerPoint?
Give me a call later, and we'll work out a deal. It may cost you lunch by mail.
All right, buddy. I'll get with you later. On the second question real quick, what are you hearing on a national ID card?
Not a whole lot. Talked to some people from the White House about 8 months ago, and there's what we're looking at is some national standards. Going back out to Washington next month. Talk to them again a little bit about it. The problem is trying to get 50 people at the same dinner table at the same time seems to be quite a task.
All right. I'll get with you offline later this week.
Great. Good to hear you.
Thank you,
Kansas, for your question.
I'll get you a copy of that.
All right. And our next question will come from Cliff with Illinois Secretary of State Police. You may go ahead.
Welcome, Cliff, from Illinois. Your question. Cliff, are you there?
Looks like Cliff dropped off the line, and there are no further questions in queue.
Okay, I've got a question, and really anybody can jump in and comment. How do we get law enforcement, basically on the local level, because those guys are out there 24/7, when they come across a fake ID, rather than just seizing it and forgetting about it, what do they need to do to go the extra step to see if we can snag some of these manufacturers? And that's really for anybody who wants to jump in.
Well, as far as the Washington State Liquor Control Board goes, I know in our regions, we work very closely with all the law enforcement agencies and giving them training, first of all, on what to look for and what we've found. And if they come across any, we just request that they turn them over to us. And most of ours, though, however, come from the bars. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you as early as this morning, my partner and I were out doing a class at a bar, and they gave us approximately 6 IDs that they confiscated. And I think it was just one of the 6 was the fake ID. And that ID was one of the one that our suspect made. So as far as law enforcement goes, we do individual training and a lot of close work with them to hand it over and see if we can build up enough to get a case.
Okay, thank you very much, Jackie. By the way, those folks who would like to pose a question to our panel, if you'll punch on your touchtone phone 01, that will get you into the queue. Megan, do we have any more questions?
You do, and that will come from Anthony with South Kingston Police. You may go ahead.
Hi. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi, how are you?
Where are you located? Where's South Kingston?
South Kingston is in southern Rhode Island. And it's
okay. Very good. Okay, go ahead with your question.
Can I comment on your last question in reference to what law enforcement can do?
Absolutely.
One thing that we do in South Kingstown is we work with our bar owners, and it's a college town. We work with the bar owners, and we have an ID seizure program where bar owners used to take an ID, look at it, tell the kid it was fake, and send them away. We're taking the IDs off the street. We're working with them, and we're giving them incentives to take that ID and contact us. Then what we do is we compare them. We'll see 300-400 IDs a semester. Not a huge amount, probably compared to the national level, but for our little town, it's pretty good. And we'll compare them. And then we go after the people manufacturing them. And, you know, if we get a guy who's manufactured 40 or 50 of them, then we can levy 40 or 50 counts of identity fraud against these people. And the first step in it is the collecting of the IDs so we have them to compare to each other.
Do you have an ordinance in Kingstown that's that addresses false identification, or is it a state law?
We use a state law, identity fraud, the identity fraud law.
Okay, and it just is a fake ID, just mere possession of it, a violation of
it? It's an interesting thing. Possession of a fake ID in Rhode Island is a felony. If you use it to try to purchase a bear, it becomes a violation, $100 fine.
Okay, very good. Very good. How many fake IDs do you confiscate a year since you're in this university town?
We do around 500 or 600 a year in the university town, and we charge 3 to 4 people a year with manufacturing them. We'll go as far. We execute search warrants. We seize laptop equipment. But my question was, if anybody else is doing similar things, what type of sanctions? Generally, our courts are handing out a 5-year deferred sentence. It's a felony charge, and they're generally handing out a 5-year deferred sentence, which basically means you stay out of trouble for 5 years and you're all set.
Give us, why don't you give your contact information if somebody wanted to get up with you?
South Kingstown Police Department, South Kingstown, Rhode Island, 401-783-3321.
Okay, one more time.
South Kingstown Police Department, South Kingstown, Rhode Island, 401-783-3321.
Very good. Thank you so much for coming on the call today.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank
Any
you.
More questions, Megan?
Yes, our next question will come from Jan with the Liquor Control Board of Washington State. You may go ahead.
Hi, this is Jan Britt. I'm the regional manager for Southwest Washington Liquor Enforcement. Welcome. And I'm proud to say Jackie Lyson works for me.
Welcome.
But what I wanted to also mention was that in 2002, in partnership with the Reduce Underage Drinking Program, we made a roll call video for local law enforcement on identifying and understanding the elements of the Washington State driver's license. So we can go out and with a 10-minute video give roll call training to local law enforcement on how they can identify the fake Washington ID.
Jan, how do you get them to, once they've identified the license, what do you tell them to do as far as interviewing and so forth to try to snag a manufacturer?
Unfortunately, we don't do too much of that. We're happy enough if they can just make the arrest and seize the fake ID. They are supposed to then forward the fake ID to our Department of Licensing, and they have an investigation unit at the Department of Licensing. Unfortunately, like a lot of things in the state these days, it's underfunded. I think they only have two investigators to investigate where the fake ID actually came from.
Okay. So you think that probably if we spent a little more time and money in that area that maybe we could get some of these fake IDs off the street?
Yes, and I think as identity theft is becoming more and more of an issue, and I really like the Florida map there where it showed that Washington State is one of the top states for identity theft, that we're going to hopefully get some legislation to that effect.
Okay, Jan, thanks so much, and appreciate you letting Jackie on the program today. Sounds like a great investigation that she and her colleagues did. Megan, any more questions that we have today?
Yes, we have one more question. It will come from Elizabeth with Pennsylvania Liquor Control. You may go ahead.
Welcome, Elizabeth from Pennsylvania.
Thank you. I work for the Responsible Alcohol Management Program in our Bureau of Alcohol Education, and we work directly with owners and managers of licensed establishments, and we run a certification program that if licensees complete a four-step process, we acknowledge that they've taken steps to educate themselves on visibly intoxicated patrons, identifying them, and also underage. Since we do work specifically with licensees, I was wondering, and I did get a little bit from Jan, how law enforcement receives training on detecting fake IDs in Washington. How about in Florida and whoever's listening, how is law enforcement trained on detecting these fake IDs?
Well, let's ask David Myers in Florida first.
Well, we've got two issues. Number one is we have to be very careful to what level we teach certain people. We have found that we have taught several very, very large nightclubs, their bouncers, certain security features and IDs, and then we find out that they are very good friends with the people manufacturing them, and then they go back and improve their IDs, and next thing it's on the Internet, certain security features that are in documents. Well, we train ID detection. We work at three levels. We look at overt, covert, and forensic levels. And we try to teach law enforcement quite a bit higher level than we teach the public. And those that have labs, we go into a higher level. We have so many different levels that we teach. Thursday, I go to teach counterfeit ID detection to members of the National Security Agency. So we're going to be looking at one extreme. A few weeks ago, we did a group that were retail financial people. So there's different levels, but I think you hit it on the head. Training is the key because so many people miss so many IDs because they don't know what they're looking for. And the idea of the old paper printers going out, until we start regulating these printers that are available on the Internet, these high-quality plastic polycarbonate printing types, we've got a big issue. And part of the big problem is training, what to train, what level to train people, and keeping it updated. By giving the wrong information, sometimes you can get an innocent person charged, and by not giving enough information, then a guilty person walks away. So it's a It's actually a fairly complex way of dealing with it, I guess.
Okay, David. Steve, what about you in Louisiana? What are you doing training local law enforcement?
Bill, it's Lewis Thompson. We've actually had two ways of training. One is through the responsible vendor system. All of our servers and sellers have to be RV certified and attend the school. We currently have fake ID training in the RV program. We will be updating that periodically, probably every 6 months, with the new developments that we've received. We also teach in the Post Academy, which is the police office standards and training. Each Post Academy that graduates local law enforcement, we have a representative, either a supervisor or an assistant director or director, go in and teach those classes. So all new law enforcement officers that are coming into the state of Louisiana are receiving an advanced training in not only alcohol beverage law, but now specifically in fake IDs.
Well, that's great. That puts it right up front for the officer on the street in the academy. Megan, do we have any more questions?
There are no further questions.
Okay. Well, that about does it for the presentation today. Before we close out, I would like, starting with Major David Myers in Florida, for each of you to give your contact information to the audience.
The best way is, I'll give you two ways. Email is David, D-A-V-I-D, dot Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, at D-B-P-R, that's Delta, Bravo, Papa, Romeo, dot State, S-T-A-T-E, dot F-L, dot U-S. And my direct line is area code 850-487-6599.
Okay, David, thank you. And let's go from Florida to Washington State. Jackie?
Okay, my email address is jhe at liq dot wa dot gov. And my number is area code 253-471-4982.
Okay, thank you. And from Washington State, back down south to Louisiana, both Steve and Lewis.
Okay, mine is L-T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, that's L Thompson, all small letters, at R-E-V dot S-T-A-T-E dot L-A dot U-S, L Thompson at rev dot state dot L-A dot U-S. Steve's is S, hold on just a second, let me get it right. S-S-P-A-L-I-T-T-A. That's S-S-P-A-L-I-T-T-A at rev.state.la.us. You can reach either of us at area code 225-925-4041.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, a special thanks to our panel of presenters and to you, the audience, for listening in today. This audio teleconference has been brought to you by the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, better known as OJJDP, and the Center for Enforcing the Underage Drinking Laws. If you would like individual counsel on your questions related to this call, please call the center at 877-335-1287. That number again, toll-free, is 877-335-1287. We'll be happy to get answers or connect you to the presenters or other resources that will help you. I'd like to take this opportunity to again thank the presenters of the call today. This audio call has been recorded so that those participants who would like to obtain a copy of the conference, just send us a blank 90-minute cassette tape to the center along with your name and return address. Our mailing address may be accessed from our website at www.u as in uniform, d as in David, e as in Echo, t as in Tom, c as in Charles, .org. That's the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, www.udetc.org. And to help us in planning our future audio teleconferences, please be sure you complete and return the evaluation form that was included in your packet. If you did not receive one, please contact us and we'll be glad to send it to you. Our next law enforcement audio teleconference will be Tuesday, March 23rd, as we focus on the most important news concerning underage drinking. The Institute of Medicine National Research Council of the National Academies report to Congress titled Reducing Underage Drinking, a Collective Responsibility. And this report, Impact for Law Enforcement. Again, the date is Tuesday, March 23rd at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Mountain, and noon Pacific Time. Also, please note that this is a change of schedule, and we remind you that if you registered for this teleconference that was originally scheduled for February 26th, and your registration will automatically be rolled over to the March date. And for those of you who registered for the original March audio call titled Law Enforcement's Role in Preparing Community Leaders for Youth Alcohol Operations, you will have to re-register since your registration will not be rolled over to the new March topic. If you have any questions about that, you can contact the center toll-free at 1-877-335-1287 or send us an email by going to our website at www.udetc.org. Please keep us informed of your activities. We'd like to receive copies of items which may be shared with other states, copies of articles, or any resources that you find useful. We would like to share this information with OJJBP and also be able to refer you to state coordinators who are doing similar work which may be of help to you. We'd like to remind you that our training center is a resource that each of you should use in your local efforts. We're always available to provide one-on-one technical support in a variety of ways. Just call us at our toll-free number at 877-335-1287 or visit our website at www.udetc.org for more information. Thank you again to our presenters and to all of you for your participation. We'll see you next time. So long for now.